Chapter 38. Women have no shame. He was of them, and great amongst them. For he was great? Lingard shook his head slightly. She frowned at him, and went on in disordered haste, "Listen. I saw him. I have lived by the side of brave men. Of chiefs. When he came I was the daughter of a beggar of a blind man without strength and hope. He spoke to me, as if I had been brighter than the sunshine, more delightful than the cool water of the brook by which we met more. Daughter anxious, I saw some shade of expression pass on her listener's face, that made her hold her breath for a second, and then explode into pain fury so violent, that it drove Lingard back a pace, like an unexpected blast of wind. He lifted both his hands, incongruously paternal in his venerable aspect, bewildered and soothing, while she stretched her neck forward, and shouted at him. I tell you I was all that to him. I know it. I saw it. There are times, when even you white men speak the truth. I saw his eyes. I felt his eyes, I tell you. I saw him tremble, when I came near, when I spoke, when I touched him. Look at me. You have been young. Look at me. Look, Rajalot. She stared at Lingard with provoking fixity, then, turning her head quickly, she sent over her shoulder a glance, full of humble fear, at the house, that stood high behind her back, dark, closed, rickety and silent on its crooked posts. Lingard's eyes followed her look, and remained gazing expectantly at the house. After a minute or so he muttered, glancing at her suspiciously, if he has not heard your voice now, then he must be far away or dead. He is there, she whispered, a little calmed, but still anxious. He is there. For 3 days he waited. Waited for you night and day. And I waited with him. I waited, watching his face, his eyes, his lips, listening to his words. To the words I could not understand. To the words he spoke in daylight. To the words he spoke at night in his short sleep. I listened. He spoke to himself walking up and down here by the river, by the bushes. And I followed. I wanted to know, and I could not. He was tormented by things that made him speak in the words of his own people. Speak to himself, not to me. Not to me. What was he saying? What was he going to do? Was he afraid of you? Of death? What was in his heart? Fear? Or anger? What desire? What sadness? He spoke, many words. All the time. And I could not know. I wanted to speak to him. He was deaf to me. I followed him everywhere, watching for some word I could understand. But his mind was in the land of his people away from me. When I touched him, he was angry so. She imitated the movement of someone shaking off roughly an importunate hand, and looked at Lingard with tearful and unsteady eyes. After a short interval of labored panting, as if he had been out of breath with running or fighting, she looked down, and went on, day after day, night after night, I lived watching him, seeing nothing. And my heart was heavy with the presence of death that dwelt amongst us. I could not believe. I thought he was afraid. Afraid of you. Then I, myself, knew fear. Tell me, Rajalot, do you know the fear without voice, the fear of silence, the fear that comes when there is no one near, when there is no battle, no cries, no angry faces or armed hands anywhere. The fear from which there is no escape. She paused, fastened her eyes again on the puzzled Lingard, and hurried on in a tone of despair, and I knew then he would not fight you. Before many days ago I went away twice, to make him obey my desire, to make him strike at his own people, so that he could be mine. Oh calamity! His hand was false as your white hearts. It struck forward, pushed by my desire, by his desire of me. It struck that strong hand, and oh shame, it killed nobody. Its fierce and lying blow woke up hate without any fear. Round me all was lies. His strength was a lie. My own people lied to me and to him. And to me, to you, the great. He had no one but me. But me with my rage, my pain, my weakness. Only me. And to me, he would not even speak. The fool. She came up close to Lingard, with the wild and stealthy aspect of a lunatic longing to whisper out an insane secret, one of those misshapen, heartrending, and ludicrous secrets. One of those thoughts that, like monsters cruel, fantastic, and mournful, wander about terrible and unceasing in the night of madness. Lingard looked at her, astounded but unflinching. She spoke in his face, very low. He is all. Everything. He is my breath, my light, my heart. Go away. Forget him. He has no courage, and no wisdom anymore. And I have lost my power. Go away and forget. There are other enemies. Leave him to me. He had been a man once. You are too great. Nobody can withstand you. I tried. I know now. I cry for mercy. Leave him to me and go away. The fragments of her supplicating sentences were as if tossed on the crest of her sobs. Lingard, outwardly impassive, with his eyes fixed on the house, experienced that feeling of condemnation, deep-seated, persuasive, and masterful, that illogical impulse of disapproval which is half disgust, half vague fear, and that wakes up in our hearts in the presence of anything new or unusual, of anything that is not run into the mold of our own conscience. The accursed feeling made up of disdain, of anger, and of the sense of superior virtue that leaves us deaf, blind, contemptuous and stupid, before anything which is not like ourselves. He answered, not looking at her at first, but speaking towards the house, that fascinated him. I go away. He wanted me to come, he himself did. You must go away. You do not know what you are asking for. Listen. Go to your own people. Leave him. He is. He paused, looked down at her with his steady eyes, hesitated, as if seeking an adequate expression, then snapped his fingers, and said, finish. She stepped back, her eyes on the ground, and pressed her temples with both her hands, which she raised to her head in a slow and ample movement full of unconscious tragedy. The tone of her words was gentle and vibrating, like a loud meditation. She said, tell the brook not to run to the river, tell the river not to run to the sea. Speak loud. Speak angrily. Maybe they will obey you. But it is in my mind that the brook will not care. The brook that springs out of the hillside and runs to the great river. He would not care for your words. He that cares not for the very mountain that gave him life, he that tears the earth from which he springs, tears it, eats it, destroys it to hurry faster to the river in which he is lost forever. Oh Rajalot, I do not care. She drew close again to Lingard, approaching slowly, reluctantly, as if pushed by an invisible hand, and added in words that seemed to be torn out of her, I cared not for my own father, for him that died. I would have rather. You do not know what I have done. You shall have his life, said Lingard, hastily. They stood together, crossing their glances. She suddenly appeased, and lingered thoughtful and uneasy under a vague sense of defeat. And yet there was no defeat. He never intended to kill the fellow, not after the first moment of anger, a long time ago. The days of bitter wonder had killed anger, had left only a bitter indignation, and a bitter wish for complete justice. He felt discontented and surprised. Unexpectedly he had come upon a human being, a woman at that, who had made him disclose his will before its time. She should have his life. But she must be told, she must know, that for such men as Willems there was no favor and no grace. Understand, he said slowly, that I leave him his life not in mercy but in punishment. She started, watched every word on his lips, and after he finished speaking she remained still, and mute in astonished immobility. A single big drop of rain, a drop enormous, pellucid and heavy like a superhuman tear coming straight and rapid from above, tearing its way through the somber sky, struck loudly the dry ground between them in a stark splash. She wrung her hands in the bewilderment of the new and incomprehensible fear. The anguish of her whisper was more piercing than the shrillest cry. What punishment? Will you take him away then? Away from me? Listen to what I have done. It is I who exclaimed Lingard, who had been looking at the house. Don't you believe her, Captain Lingard, shouted Willems from the doorway, where he appeared with swollen eyelids and bared breast. He stood for a while, his hands grasping the lintels on each side of the door, and writhed about, glaring wildly, as if he had been crucified there. Then he made a sudden rush head foremost down the plankway, that responded with hollow, short noises to every footstep. She heard him. A slight thrill passed on her face and the words that were on her lips fell back unspoken into her benighted heart, fell back amongst the mud, the stones and the flowers that are at the bottom of every heart. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.